However you know him, he is a man of many talents. Through his 25-year career, he's proven himself an accomplished entertainer, musician, author, and broadcast personality. From investigative journalism to a radio show offering listeners advice on a range of topics, to 7 hit PBS music specials and a best-selling book. He has a remarkable understanding of the media business, allowing him to reach millions of people on multiple platforms. And we're delighted to have him here today. Please welcome the very talented John Tesh.
Thank you. Thank you guys for inviting me to be a part of the NAB this year. Very exciting to be here. And it's incredible to be here. Where is Dave? With Dave Ramsey, who is, I was sort of stalking him backstage because I've read all of his stuff. And those of you, you probably don't know this, but was it 10 years ago that we worked together? 10 years ago, Dave and his team called me up and they said, hey, why don't you come be our opening act for our Total Money Makeover book tour, and this arena tour that was reaching 5,000 to 10,000 people for every show. And I said, okay, fine. So it was very cool. I played a grand piano for 15 minutes to warm up the crowd. And it went wonderfully for a couple of shows until Dave's audience figured out that me playing piano was going to do nothing to get them to debt-free. So we moved on. But I did get a chance to see how Dave runs his business and the kind of people that he has hired and mentored, and couldn't be a better guy for the award, Dave. Thanks so much for that opportunity to play for you. So, you guys are probably wondering what the whole keynote thing is going to be. I have to really apologize because I don't have numbers. I don't know what's going on with the digital dashboard. Any of that stuff, but I do, based on my sort of ADD crazy career, I am qualified to tell you what the germiest thing is in your hotel room. I have celebrity birthdays rattling around in my head still from back in the day. Hugh Hefner is 87 today. Check it out. And I still have the leaderboard from the 1992 Olympic Games gymnastics from CBS Sports rattling around in my head. It was after 3 rounds, Svetlana Boginskaya, Tatiana Gutsu, Vladimir Milosevic, Huang Huadong, and Li Shuashuang. 10 seconds to walk here. Thank you. So, people come up to me all the time, and if they hear the Intelligence Fair Live radio program on the air, and they're like, I thought you were the television guy. You're on the radio now? What's up with that? And what I tell them, and what I need to tell you, is that I started in radio. I started when I have a special love for old school radio. I started back in 1964. I was 12 years old. And my dad bought me one of those Heathkit radio broadcast stations. Anybody as old as me that knows what the Heathkit is? Yeah, so you send away for this thing, right? And you get these, it's not put slot A into slot B, it is a serious kit. And what you do is you have to have a special screwdriver, and you've got to have the soldering iron, and you assemble this thing. It takes you days, and you got to connect the diodes to the capacitors and all the rest of that stuff. And then you have an antenna, and then you plug Mr. Microphone into the back of the thing, and then you can broadcast 300 feet. So I had the John Tesh radio show. We were on every day. I broadcast into the radio in the kitchen. I broadcast into the radio in the living room. And I broadcast into my dad's car in the driveway, and my friend, my next door neighbor, Donnie Holman, did traffic and weather together. And it was great fun. And we had, our numbers were pretty good. We had women 18 to 34. We had a 1, and that was my mom in the kitchen. And we realized, as a GM and NPD and talent, I realized that I needed to somehow find a way to grow my audience. I needed a bigger stick. So I did what you guys would do. I took the batteries out of the Heathkit radio, and I took a lamp cord and I frayed the ends of it, and I attached that to the battery leads, and then I plugged the Heathkit into 110 volts in the wall. So for about 8.5 minutes, we reached most of the North Shore of Long Island on every frequency. until the radio burned down and we were canceled. But anybody who knew me back in the day would tell you that's what this guy was going to do with his life. I was totally geeked out, not as geeked out as Mark Edwards, but very, very, very geeked out. And I was always assembling stuff like that, and I was always connecting stuff that shouldn't be connected, and I had an 8mm camera, and I was always doing little movies, and I was in two garage bands, and anybody who saw me would say, oh, this kid's always putting on shows for the kids in the neighborhood. So when I graduated from high school, My parents decided that I would probably starve to death if I was in the entertainment business, and so they sent me to North Carolina State to study textile chemistry. So on any given day for 2.5 years, I was studying surface active agents, I was matching shades, and I was doing warp and woof counts, and I was completely and totally miserable. But that was my major, and all my friends were in television and radio, and I saw them having a great time, and I was just, how do I get out of this thing? So I finally did something that I don't recommend, and that is to change your major without telling your parents. But I did that. I went to all of my professors one by one, and I said, hey, listen, this is my passion, this is what I feel like, this is my purpose in life. And, could you let me drop this, your course? And one by one, they said yes, and they totally got it. But there was one holdout, and it was my statistics professor, and he thought that I should stick it out. I had started this major, and I should stick it out, and I was 2.5 years, I was a junior, I was way in. And plus, he said, you're past the drop at, date. And so, I was stuck. I couldn't change my major. I was going to go another semester and a summer without being able to change to RTV. So I went back to my fraternity house. I'm telling my friend Steve Thomas about my lament, and he says, well, this is easy. Just do what I do. So just sign the professor's name to the drop-out card. I said, you can do that? And he says, yeah, I do it all the time. I just dropped 2 courses this week. And I said, really? And he says, yeah, he's never going to find out. There's 25,000 people in this university. How is this one guy going to care about this one drop and card? You won't even ever see it. So it sounded like a good idea at the time. So I signed my professor's name to the drop ad card, and it worked perfectly. I mean, I was out, I was into RTV, and I was on my way to the career I had always wanted. Until about 2 months, and then my dad got a letter from the university, and serious stuff, and they said that I had broken the honor code by doing this, that I was going to be suspended for at least a semester, and probably longer. I would have to appeal to get back into the university, and that I would get an F for the statistics course. And what you have to understand is that my whole family, except for me, I was born in New York, my whole family is from the deep, deep South, Southern Baptist. And my dad was raised in rural North Carolina on a farm. And so when a farm animal did something wrong, that's what they had for dinner. And so he did what was not unexpected of him. He kicked me out of the house. And he let me have the car, a 1967 Volkswagen Fastback, and I put my pup tents from Boy Scouts in the back of it, and I drove. I had disgraced my family, I had disgraced myself, it's a true story. And I could, even talking about it, I get the chills now. And so I headed back to Raleigh, which was where NC State is. And I, long story short, I lived in a tent in the park in Tanglewood for several months, and then I pumped gas at College Esso. Feel better about yourself already? Yeah, it was terrible. And then what happened was my fraternity brothers, they came to get their gas, their cars filled up, and there I was, and they're like averting their eyes, the girls wouldn't talk to me, and it was just a terrible situation. Until one day, this woman pulls up in her car, and I do the obligatory, this is when you actually did check oil, I did the obligatory, I'll check that oil for you. And she snapped up and she said, wow, what a voice. Are you on the radio? And I said, why, no, I'm not presently. Why do you ask? And she said, well, wow, you should be on the radio. I said, I agree. And so she said, listen, do you want to be on the radio? I said, yes, of course I do. It's what I've always wanted to do. She said, well, I'm the sales manager at WKIX Radio. I said, oh, the Rick D station. And she goes, yeah. And I think I can get you an audition. Why don't you come by tomorrow, like 11 o'clock, and I'll tell Scott White, the news director, and we'll get you an audition. We'll just see what happens. Like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Thank you so much. So the next day, 11 o'clock, I show up with hair down to here and flip-flops, and I meet Scott White, and I walk into this newsroom, and you guys know this feeling. There are scanners going. There's reel-to-reel tapes going. There are people with razor blades editing their stuff, microphones everywhere, and UPI audio and all that stuff all happening. You know, the teletypes, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm home. And so I sit down, he hands me two pieces of wire copy, and he said, here, just read these and I'll record them. And I did that, and it was terrible. I mean, it was horrible, and he knew it, and 45 seconds in, he stopped the tape machine, and he said, listen, you have a nice instrument there, but you really don't have any experience, it's obvious, and all the guys here, the news guys and women, they're all very experienced, and why don't you go to a smaller market, you know, get some experience, and then come back, and I thanked him for his time. And as I left, that epiphany that everybody in this room has had at some point, it just chucked on me. It was a Holy Spirit moment for me where I just felt like I had to be in that newsroom. I had to be working either in that newsroom or some newsroom, and I was going to make that happen. And so what I did was I went around and I got newspapers and magazines and got them mostly out of the trash, and I started reading these articles, and I started reading them in my new radio voice. And I started practicing over and over again. I mean, 3-4 hours a day when I wasn't pumping gas, I was practicing being a newscaster. And then in the afternoons, I'd get in my car and I'd drive around and I would listen to J. Paul McGonigal and Scott White and Bill Leslie and this is Doug Lyric, 2020 News. I listened to all those guys. As they were talking, I would repeat what they were saying in their inflection. And I would figure out, you know, what they were doing. And then at night, at 6 o'clock at night, I watched the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite, who was covering Watergate. And I would repeat what Walter was saying with his inflection, you know, as it was happening. And I was learning, and that was a little creepy because when I showed up at the gas station the next day, it was like, check that oil for you! And people were like, what the hell is that? But I started to develop a style. And I thought, okay, you know what, it's time for me to do another demo tape, a demo tape of my own. And the problem was that I didn't have, you know, access to any of the actualities. I didn't have access to, any of the tapes, the carts, not even any wire copy. So I had to make it all up. I had to create a fake demo tape. And so it was. I got to a piano and I did the, you know, and then the, you know, bam, bam, bam. This is John Tesh, WKIX 2020 News, Middle East, Kissinger, peace. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger today talked about détente and a possible peace in the Middle East. Here is correspondent Maurice Gindy with more.
This is Maurice Gindy in Cairo today. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger had this to say about the possibility of détente in the Middle East.
I think that, yes, there's a possibility of détente in the Middle East.
This is Maurice Gindy in Cairo.
And I'm John Tesh, WKIX 2020 News. Rick Dees in the morning and a bunch more music and weather. You're listening to WKIX. So that went on for about 6-7 minutes, by the way, which I won't do for you. So I took that tape to Kix, and I dropped it off at the front desk with a note for Scott White, the news director, and I just said, hey, if you have a moment, please listen to this. And about 4 days later, the phone rang at the gas station, and there was laughter on the other end, and it was, I could hear Scott White's voice and a bunch of other people laughing, and he said, John, is this John? I said, yes, this is Scott White. I said, hey, Mr. White. And he said, listen, we've listened to this tape like 5 times. Did you do all the voices on this tape? I said, yeah, why? And he said, it's incredible. He said, I've never heard anything like it. Listen, if you, how long did this take you? And I said, like 4 or 5 days. He goes, if you want this job bad enough, you can do the overnight news, the 2020 news, and I'll train you myself. And it was a life-changing moment for me. It was, and especially since I had been plucked from the jaws of defeat and from disgrace. And it was that that moment and what I learned at that first radio station, it followed me everywhere. And, you know, from there I went to WTVD in Durham to do the, you know, to develop their news film. And then the anchorman got sick and I ended up, doing the news there, working the teleprompter with my foot. And then there was, Orlando, Florida, and then on to WSM with Pat Sajak and Oprah Winfrey. And in 1976, when I was 23, I ended up at WCBS-TV in New York, somehow. And then on to CBS Sports to cover the Olympic Games, and then to Entertainment Tonight, of course, for 10 years. But at WCBS in 1976, I had an incredible encounter that sort of brought it all full circle for me. I'm getting ready for the local nightly news in the broadcast center at CBS on West 57th Street. And I'm walking down the hallway, and I've got my scripts, my news script in my left hand for the 6 o'clock. And I've got, coffee in a styrofoam cup in my right hand. And I'm walking along like this, and all of a sudden, down the hallway, I see Walter Cronkite. And he's got his script in his left hand. And he's got coffee in a styrofoam cup in his right hand. And I'm thinking, samesies. How cool is this? Me and the Kronk. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I have to tell him this story of how he was just a special part of this audition that I did for WKIX. I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to say? Do I have, how much time do I have? And he's closing in on me. He's getting closer and closer. And I'm holding my coffee, and the coffee's so hot, it's spilling on my hand, it's burning me, and I'm dying. I'm thinking, what am I going to say? He gets 5 feet from me, and he stops, looks me dead in the eye, and looks at my hand, which is smoking. And he says this, shock absorbers. I said, I'm sorry, sir. Shock absorbers. Bend at the knees. I'm sorry, sir. Shock absorbers while you're walking with coffee, and you'll burn yourself alive, son. And that was it. He left. I didn't get to tell my story. And now I walk like this. Twenty-six years later, the radio bug bit me again. Casey Kasem was going on one of his vacations, contract negotiation, and they needed celebrities to fill in, and I was one of those guys. Remember this guy? Yeah, and they called him and said, hey, would you just, Scotty and Betsy, of course, remembers this, would you fill in? I said, sure, you get American Top 40, how cool is this? And so I went and I did the show, and it was like, wow, that it was, so much fun. And so I went with my agent to Westwood One and said, hey, I'd be interested in doing a weekend show, what do you think? They're like, oh yeah, cool. So we developed this show. It was called One on One with John Tesh, and it was a countdown show. And we picked up about 20 stations, something like that, and it lasted for about a year, and they canceled it. And I did something after that, because I was so crushed by this, I did something after that that my business manager later would call suicide. I called up Scotty Myers, and I said, who was my song plugger at the time, of course, you know what that is, calling stations and plugging my music. And I called him and said, hey, Scotty, listen, we're going to do this radio show. We're going to do it ourselves, and you're the affiliate relations guy. And he says, what the heck is that? And I said, don't worry about it. You'll figure it out. You're a great salesman. Just start calling stations and tell them we have a great show. He goes, okay, I'm on it. And so I needed a show. I had to figure out what this show was going to be, and I just read Differentiate or Die. And so the show was actually created at the hands of my wife, Connie, sort of by accident. We were retiring from the evening one night, and she looks at my side of the bed, which is all horrible ADD stuff. It's like pieces of wires and sheet music and iPods all broken up together. And she says, this is our sleep chamber. What is this stuff? And so as a good husband, I felt like I needed to cross-complain. And so I looked at her side of the bed, and it was all magazines, like Oprah Magazine and Prevention Magazine and all this stuff, and it was just stacked up with yellow sticky notes in there. I said, well, what's this crap? And she said, these are the articles that I want to get to, that I want to read. It's all health and wellness stuff and longevity and all of that, and I'll get to it eventually. And the light bulb went off, and it was like, oh my gosh, that's the show. We'll do a show for this woman who wants to live an intelligent life, but doesn't have time to get to it. We'll call this Intelligence for Your Life. We'll surround it with music. It'll be like 2 minutes to, you know, tidbits. And I felt like I had got it. And talked to Betsy Chase, you know, and hired her as the producer and our lead writer. She hired this dream team of expert researchers and put the whole thing to, you know, together with all of us. And so we started with like 5-6 stations, and then 5 became 10, and 10 became 50, and then it became hundreds. And then the show ended up line extending, and Connie was kind enough to do Intelligence for Your Health. And it's one of those things where it continued to grow. It's such a huge blessing for me, because I have to tell you that in the 10 years that I did Entertainment Tonight, nobody ever called me up. Nobody ever sent me a message saying, "Oh my gosh, John, that interview you did with the Olsen twins really lit me up." But every day, you know, radio, every day they call us and they email us and they Facebook us and they Tumblr us and whatever the rest of that crap is. And they say, "Oh my gosh, you shrunk my waistline. I lost 30 pounds. I found my purpose in life. I'm everything but debt free. I'll get that from Dave." And all this stuff is, you know, it's incredible. And we felt like, well, we had this conversation that we were having with people. And that's really what, of course, you know, that's what radio is all about. So I wanted to come, you know, and talk about my crazy history so you feel, you know, better about yourself. But also tell you that I'm so grateful, because there are so many people in here who believed when you didn't even know what you were believing in. And so I appreciate the you wrapping your arms around our show, and it's been a huge blessing for us. And I asked the guys here if I could give you like a parting gift, you know, like an iPad or an iPod, each and every one of you. And they said, well, that would be a payola. So I decided to bring a gift that you could all share together. And it's a song that I wrote especially for you. I hope you enjoy it. I want to ask Tony Guerrero and Tim Landers to join me. More than anything in life, I believe that old school radio, the way it used to be, is the way we should be doing radio. And if we get that right again, people just won't be able to touch us. This is old school radio. Okay, everybody. Yo, my name is John, and I'm at the NAB. It's exciting for me, and just a little creepy. You see, I'm not a PD, a GM, or CFO, but I love old school radio. It's the NAB. It's the legacy of Scully and Skelton and Jack Benny, Orson Welles and Bob and Ray. And today is the day for Dave Ramsey. Dave's living the dream, he's living debt-free. And how's that a touch of irony? The guy we're inducting is living debt-free.
The guy we're inducting is living debt-free.
What? I wasn't sure what to say on this special day, so I did some consulting with Mike McVay. He said, be real, be funny, but don't ever rap. And then he charged $1,000 for that piece of crap. But hey, Mike's the one who told me to start your own show. He said, go after nights where there's room to grow. There's a woman there already who is truly great. But you can be different, differentiate.
Delilah!
I love old school radio. I grew up with this, and I really miss Cousin Brucey, Dan Ingram, and Casey Kasem, Allison Steele, and Salty Brine, Wolfman Jack, and Larry Lou Jack, and the incomparable Murray the K. Yeah, I love old school radio. These were my friends. They were groovy. They were cool. I took them on my bike on my way home from school. They were with me in the morning when I drove to work. They made me laugh when I got dumped for being a jerk. I took them to the beach and they helped me learn. I knew when to turn so I wouldn't burn. I love old school radio, but now it's different, and I'm okay with that. The players are bigger, it's scary in fact. It's Clear Channel, Town Square, Cumulus. Someone please tell me who's I Need to Kiss.
Someone please tell me who's I Need to Kiss.
Listen, I'm not here for some great lament. Who wants to live with feet in wet cement? We're a force of nature when we work as one. Millions are listening, it's over and done. Advertisers love us, don't discount that. Look at any traffic jam, consumers are trapped. Millennials, boomers, and X's and Y's. Forget all the researcher listening, and why don't we cut the crap and boldly go with more of our hearts and less Codiano. Take a tip from Paul Harvey, turn the page to number 2. Be encouraged, be blessed, and regain our groove. So why don't you join me in my new attitude? Let's rewind this madness and go old school. You can beam it or stream it or iTunes-icate it. It has a purpose and they'll all embrace it. I know it's a challenge, so we must innovate. It's old school radio version 2.8. We'll figure this out, no hyperbole. We're in the war zone being all we can be. But what if it should fail and it all falls down? I'll still have overnights in Germantown. Old school, baby.
Thank you, John. That was...